So just to remind you where we were last time. So last time we started talking about the Boltzmann equation, which to remind you took the form df dt is, well, yeah, the collision term. We saw that in a homogeneous universe, we can write the left-hand side as partial f partial t minus hpi. Partial f, partial pi. So last time we discussed the collisionless Boltzmann equation where we set the right-hand side to zero. So now today let's start talking about what happens when there are interactions, when there are collisions. So just schematically, you know, we can think of this collision term as just telling us all the possible ways that collisions, interactions can produce particles of species I at location x with momentum p, right? So this includes all possible interactions, and so therefore this will be a sum over all the possible like Feynman diagrams and so on. So in principle, that sum over 10 bajillion diagrams can be extremely complicated. I don't want to go into that. And so instead, let's just think, you know, first a bit schematically about what this means, okay? So schematically, we can think of this this collision term as being something like, okay, yeah, so schematically, okay, let's just think of it as being something like, you know, a rate at which the distribution function is changing. And the reason why it's useful to think about this collision term in terms of like a rate is that there are, you know, there will be two limiting regimes of these interactions, okay? So what I mean is that there are two regimes when these interactions are fast or slow. Now, when I say fast and slow, I have to specify fast or slow compared to what, right? And so you can see that fast or slow here will mean fast or slow compared to this side, i.e. the Hubble expansion rate, okay? So when we say fast, what I mean is that, so fast interactions correspond to when this interaction rate gamma is large compared to the Hubble expansion rate, okay? Then you can see then that this derivative will be dominated by the interaction term, and then slow just means that this interaction rate is slow compared to the Hubble rate, okay? Now in this slow regime, we can, to a good approximation, just neglect the interactions, okay? So in that regime, the behavior is what we, the behavior is what we talked about last time, you know, pretty close to the collisionless regime, okay? And so last time we saw, you know, that in that regime, so in this regime, all right, so we saw that momenta just redshift like 1 over a, you know, number densities dilute like 1 over a cubed, and so on, right? And so all of the behavior that we saw last time. But conversely, when the rate of interactions is large, okay, in this regime, we can neglect this Hubble term in the Boltzmann equation, okay? And then this problem becomes just, the exact same problem that you guys previously solved in your previous statistical physics classes, where you worked out, the behavior for a non-expanding universe, right? So in particular, you guys hopefully have seen that when the rate of interactions is very high, the distribution function gets driven towards an equilibrium solution. Right? So you guys have seen that, I hope, okay? The form of this equilibrium distribution is just a thermal distribution, which we can write in the following way. So f of momentum p is 1 over e to the e minus mu over t, and then minus or plus 1, where the minus sign is for bosons, and the plus sign is for fermions, right? So these are called Bose, Einstein, and Fermi direct distributions, and hopefully you guys have seen that before. So again, T is the temperature, and mu is the chemical potential. And so schematically, you know, so you can think of this mu as just the cost and free energy associated with adding a particle of this species. Okay, so hopefully you've all seen that before. So for example, okay, so suppose we have some interaction. Okay, so schematically, let's just think of it as like some particle A and B, okay, coming in, they interact in some unspecified way, and then particles C and D come out, okay? If these sort of reactions and also the reverse reactions are happening very quickly, okay, you know, then you've seen that A, B, C, and D all get driven towards thermal distributions, where the temperatures TA is equal to TB is equal to TC is equal to TD, okay, right? You know, kinetic equilibrium, right? We're also driven towards chemical equilibrium. Do you guys remember what that means here in terms of these parameters written down? Mu equals
zero.
Mu what?
Mu equals zero.
Not necessarily zero. Yeah, kind of, right? Well, so the sum of the chemical potentials of the ingoing, like the reactants, is equal to the sum on, you know, sum of the products. And you guys have seen that derivation, right? So you understand where that comes from? Okay, good. So then I can skip deriving it and spare 5 minutes. So in equilibrium, the distribution functions have this thermal form. You know, where again, the temperatures of all of the reactants, you know, TA is equal to TB is equal to CC is equal to TD. And also the sum of the chemical potentials of the reactants is equal to the sum of the chemical potentials of the products. Okay? So if we, for example, consider like a very, you know, well-known process like Bremsstrahlung, okay, where we have, for example, you know, like an electron and a proton scattering off of each other, say with, you know, some photon intermediate, okay, and the coming out proton and electron. And in the process, then we know, you know, suppose that we also radiate some other photon, okay. The existence of interactions like these happening at a high rate, you know, means that again, electrons, protons, photons will all be in chemical equilibrium, which says that the chemical potential of the reactants, UE plus UP, is equal to the chemical potential of the products, electron, proton, and also photon, okay? Which says that therefore the chemical potential of the photons is zero due to processes like these, which do not conserve photon number, right? So as long as, you know, these sort of interactions are happening quickly enough that, you know, that these species remain in, you know, that these species remain in equilibrium, this will be true. Okay, similarly, you know, things like pair annihilation. So if we have electrons and positrons annihilating, okay, then it tells us that mu e plus mu positron is equal to 2 mu photon, and therefore mu e is equal to minus mu positron, right? Okay, so just some very simple examples of chemical equilibrium, okay? Right, okay, but again, so the upshot here, though, is that, right, so when reaction rates are very high, then the species that are reacting get driven towards this sort of thermal equilibrium, you know, so meaning chemical equilibrium and also kinetic equilibrium, okay? So what we'll see over the course today and also next time, you know, is that in the early universe, okay, so back when densities are very high, temperatures are very high, you know, these sort of reaction rates are fast enough that we're in this fast regime, okay, so for the reactions that we'll be considering, you know, we'll be staying in equilibrium, but then eventually, you know, closer to today in the late universe, what we'll find is that for lots of the important reactions of interest, eventually the reaction rates become slow compared to Hubble, in which case these particles fall out of equilibrium, okay? And so once we fall out of equilibrium, then these species can have a different temperature than we might have naively expected. They can even have non-thermal distributions, as we'll see, okay? So first let's go through the the early universe case when we have equilibrium, and then we'll discuss what happens later on once we fall out of equilibrium. Okay. So okay, good. So we'll start with these thermal distributions. Now, for the Friedmann equations, we need things like the energy density and the pressure, right? So let's compute the densities given by these sort of thermal distributions. Okay, so for example, we saw before that the number density, is just a simple integral over the distribution function.
Wait, sorry. Would you mind just reminding us again that gamma is the rate of what again?
Yeah. Okay. So what I'm doing is to write this collision term schematically as the distribution function times a rate.
So is the collision of what? Just matter?
All possible interactions like this, like that, all possible interactions that my species I is participating in.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. So any process that can take, that can either produce a particle of species I at location x, at momentum p, okay, or conversely, a process that can remove a particle of species I, location x particle, momentum p, okay? All possible processes like that, we add all of them up to get this overall collision term, okay? So it's this horrendous integral over all the possible interactions, right? So here, for example, we'd be summing over all possible momenta for these ingoing particles, all possible momenta for the outgoing particles, and so on. And then also then, besides these sort of tree diagrams, we'll also have, loops, and so on and so on, okay? And so the C corresponds to sum over every possible diagram like that.
And the idea for like why it's low is like everything's kind of not dense and spread apart in the greater universe?
Yeah, exactly that's what happens, okay? So as we saw, as universe expands, the densities all dilute, okay? The reaction rates scale with the densities, right? So we've seen how, generally reaction rates go like n sigma v, where n is the number density, sigma is the cross section, v is like a relative velocity, right? And so eventually, at late times, these number densities get low, the cross sections can scale with the relative energies, okay? These velocities also get smaller and smaller. And so generically what you find is that towards the late universe, for the sort of processes we'll be considering, these reaction rates become eventually slow compared to the Hubble expansion rate. Okay, yeah. Okay, and so the picture to have in mind is that early on reaction rates are super fast, and so therefore all the species, electrons, photons, quarks, leptons, everything, they're all staying in equilibrium with each other. Okay, until eventually. The energies and the densities get low enough that these reactions eventually fall out of equilibrium. Okay, but we'll start in the early universe case where all these species are just constantly scattering off of each other and staying in equilibrium at first. Okay, and so we'll work out the behavior in that regime, and then we'll see then what happens later on once the interactions become rare enough that the species can all fall out of equilibrium. Okay. Okay, right. But first we'll start off with the easier case of equilibrium. Okay, right. And so as I said, okay, so what we want, for the Friedmann equations is the density and the pressure. Okay, so first what we'll do is to compute densities and pressures assuming these sort of thermal distributions. Okay, so first let's just compute the number density. Okay, so as we said, it's just a simple integral over the distribution function. Okay. So since this distribution function depends only on the total energy and not on the direction of the momentum, okay, we can, we can write this as g times, we can just do the angular part of the integral, okay? So we get 4 pi p squared dp, 2 pi cubed f of e. And next, let's use that e squared is m squared plus p squared. So therefore, e dE is p dP. So my my integrand, I have p squared dP, which is, p e dE, which is square root of e squared minus m squared. Right? I suppose that you guys, I mean, also have seen this, haven't you? Okay, so maybe, okay, so perhaps then I can also skip going through that. Okay, yes, maybe I'll skip through that. And okay, well, so first of all, just write down the final expression. Okay, so most generally, you get g over 2 pi squared to infinity. E over t, and then plus or minus 1. Okay, so there's going to be two limiting cases for us to consider, okay? So first, let's consider the ultra-relativistic regime, where the temperature is large compared to the rest mass, okay? Yes, we'll call this like the relativistic regime. And then later, then we'll consider then the you know, the opposite regime, the cold regime, where temperature is very small compared to the rest mass. Okay, but first let's do this relativistic regime. Okay, so in this regime, the mass becomes negligible compared to the energies in this integral. Okay, so then here we can then write this as approximately equal to integral from 0 to infinity of and then I can just pull out I can just pull that out, integral from 0 to infinity of x squared dx over e to the x plus or minus 1. Okay, so of course this is just some number, g is just some number, and pi is just some number, okay? So the key thing to take home is that, you know, the number density scales like the cube of the temperature. And of course, it has to behave that way on dimensional grounds. And so do you all see why that is? Or that is, can you tell me why that is? Why does the number density have to scale like t cubed just on dimensional grounds?
Because the volume is scaling as a cubed and the temperature scales as a,
On dimensional grounds, number density has dimensions of inverse volume. Okay.
So volume.
Can you continue the line of thought?
Temperature is 1 over length because the
game. And temperature has dimensions of energy, i.e., dimensions of inverse length in our units. Okay. Is temperature the only dimensionful quantity here?
G is
a number. Like what?
Yeah.
It is, right? Okay, it is because we are neglecting the mass. Okay, if the mass were not negligible, it would also be a dimensionful parameter. In which case, it's not. You know, I mean, in which case, the density wouldn't necessarily have to scale like t cubed, as we'll see. Okay, good. Right. Okay, So this integral is just some number. It's fun to evaluate. I guess you say, I mean, okay, so presumably you've all seen before how this is related to the Riemann zeta function. Yeah, okay, right, so good. So ultimately in the end we get that this is, I can't draw zeta, so I'll try to draw, okay, so pretend that zeta. Okay, well, thank you for your, thank you for that. Zeta of 3.
She's Greek.
All right. Now I feel proud of myself. And then times either 2 or 3 halves for bosons and for fermions. And the zeta of 3 is a number of order 1. Okay. So that's number density. The energy density is a very similar expression. So dimensionally, how does it have to scale with temperature? How does the energy density have to scale with temperature? T to the fourth, right? It has to, right? Okay. So let me just write out the expression. So we get that rho in this regime is approximately g times pi squared over 30, t to the fourth, and then either 1 or 7/8 for bosons and for fermions. Okay, and then similarly, the pressure. Well, right, so it's easy to see that the pressure is just going to work out to rho over 3. Okay. If you want to see why, you know, so for the energy density, we take the same integral multiplied by E. For the pressure, we take the same integral multiplied by, instead by P squared over 3E. These are relativistic, so P is E. So P squared over 3E is E over 3, which is the same integral as for the energy density with a 1/3, all right? Is that too fast or perfect? Okay, good. And so this is something that we saw before. Okay, right, so for relativistic radiation, pressure is just 1/3 of the energy density, i.e. the equation of state parameter W is 1/3, as we said before. Okay, good, so that's all useful stuff to keep for later on. Okay, next let's do now the cold regime where T is much, much less than M. Yeah, so call this cold. Okay. I mean, have you guys also seen this or no? Because last time when I asked, it wasn't clear if people were familiar with this regime. So, do you guys recall how these densities will scale with temperature? So, should I go through it?
Cold regime is just like late universe
regime. Yeah. So, I'm asking if you guys know the expressions for like the number density, the energy density, the pressure, and so on.
In this
cold regime where temperatures are small compared to the rest mass. It's fine if you haven't seen it, we can go through it. So we should, let's do it.
Is it like similar to what's generally done in like statistical mechanics or is
this like? So here I'm just reviewing what you guys may have seen before in your previous statistical physics classes. I'm not sure what you guys have covered before.
It's
totally fine to go through it. I mean, for me, it's fine either way. Just don't want to bore you guys with things you've seen before. let's go through it. Okay, so again, the number density is this integral g over 2 pi squared of m to infinity. What we said before, e squared minus m squared. E dE over a distribution function e to the e over t plus or minus 1. Okay, so let's multiply top and bottom by e to the minus e over t. Okay, let me do that. So top and bottom, so e to the minus e over t, and then also the bottom, so 1 plus or minus e to the minus e over t. So for now, let's just consider the case where the chemical potential mu is 0. More generally, you know, instead of E over T, we'll have E minus mu over T, you know, but otherwise it's the exact same reasoning. But for simplicity, just to spare me from writing mu everywhere, let's just do mu equals 0. Okay? So far so good. Next, let's write that E is equal to M plus epsilon, where this epsilon will be small. Okay, so then replacing all the e's with epsilons, okay, we get that our expression is n is the integral. Well, here n is g over 2 pi squared. E to the minus m over t, integral from 0 to infinity of 2m epsilon, is epsilon squared, e to the minus epsilon over t, and then on the bottom, 1 plus or minus e to the minus m over t, e to the minus epsilon over t. Okay, so you all with me so far?
When you say cold, you mean we still have thermal equilibrium. So it's not very late universe, but somewhere.
Yeah, that's right. So okay, yeah. So I'm still working in the regime where, you know, where the species are still in equilibrium. Okay, so they still have a thermal distribution, but just in the regime where the temperature now is small compared to their own rest mass. Okay, and then we're just working out the densities in that regime.
This is still in our past.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. So all you did, so all you just is to replace energy with M plus epsilon. Okay. Now what we'll do is to use that T is very small compared to M. So therefore this e to the minus m over t is a small number. Okay, so therefore what I'll do now is to neglect this piece compared to the one. Okay. Right. Secondly, so since t is much smaller than m, then the presence of this exponential piece of the integrand means that the only important part of the integration range is also going to be where epsilon is small compared to m. Okay, that makes sense? Okay, so first we have that this piece is small compared to 1, and then secondly, t much, much less than m means that also the relevant part of the integration range is where epsilon is much, much less than m. Okay, so therefore now I can now neglect this piece compared to this piece compared to this piece, and so on. Okay, so therefore this is approximately g e to the minus m over t over 2 pi squared. Okay, then I'll pull out the 2m. Good. So I have an m here, I have a square root of 2m there, so I get square root of 2m cubed. Integral from 0 to infinity, square root of epsilon, e to the minus epsilon over t, d epsilon. Okay, hopefully it's all correct. Let me make this dimensionless, okay, so I'll write epsilon is equal to some dimensionless number x times t. Okay, so then I can pull out a half and then plus 1, so 3 halves powers of t. So t cubed on the inside, x, and then this you might recognize as a gamma function. Okay, yeah, so all of this is just gamma of 3 halves, which is equal to square root of pi over 2. Okay, so then in the end, the final expression we get is that the number density is approximately in this regime given by g e to the minus m over t of mt over 2 pi to the 3 halves. Okay? So first let's compare this to what we got in the in the other regime, right, where we said that the number density goes like t cubed. Okay? Right. So again, right? So here we don't get it as scales like t cubed because there's because there are two dimensionful parameters in the problem, okay? Right, so now we can ask, okay, so now at the same temperature, which of these is bigger, this or this? Okay, relativistic versus non-relativistic for the same temperature, okay? What do you guys think? Okay, so first of all, this scales like t cubed. This scales like mt to the 3 halves, right? And m is much bigger than t. So this piece is therefore much bigger than that piece, okay? However, though, we also have this term here, okay? So in the limit where m is large compared to t, this is exponentially tiny, okay? So therefore, the number density of non-relativistic particles in equilibrium at the same temperature is much, much less than the number density of relativistic particles in equilibrium at the same temperature, okay? That is, it is exponentially tiny, and so this exponential suppression is called Boltzmann suppression. Okay. And physically, this should make sense, right? So physically, why does it make sense that, for temperatures that are small compared to the rest mass, the number density of those species has to become super tiny? Okay, so we are staying in equilibrium, okay? And so to be in equilibrium, what's required? So to stay in equilibrium, what is required?
Constant temperature.
Sorry?
Constant temperature.
No. Different species that are, different species that are in kinetic equilibrium with each other will have the same temperature. Right. But just to stay in thermal equilibrium. Well, for species I to stay in thermal equilibrium with species J, they have to talk to each other, right? That is, they have to be interacting with each other frequently, okay? So here, we're assuming that this species is interacting frequently with the rest of the rest of the plasma, like the photons, everything else, right? Okay, the photons, let's say, are massless, because they are. This species is massive with a mass large compared to the temperature. So then why then does it make sense then for their number density to plummet? Okay, so if we plot their number density versus time, or let's say versus temperature, okay, so at first it's going like t to the minus 3, but then this exponential factor kicks in and it falls off a cliff.
Which number density, like all of the species' number densities are just like...
This species that we're considering here, okay? So for masses, this is totally wrong, what am I doing? So for temperatures that are large compared to the mass, it's falling like T cubed. And then when temperatures are less than the mass, it falls off a cliff. And just physically, why does that make sense that it has to behave that way? While this species is frequently interacting with the rest of the universe, like the photons, the neutrinos, everything else.
It's more energetically favorable to have more of the other species than the high mass ones.
Exactly, that's right. Okay, so is that, so, okay, so, is, okay, so should you all follow that? Okay, so, right, so, okay, so for example, consider like electrons and positrons, right? Okay, one of the interactions they can do is E plus and E minus, can go back and forth between two photons, right? As long as the photon energies are large compared to the rest masses of electrons and positrons, okay, we can frequently pair produce, right? And conversely, E plus and E, the electrons and positrons can of course always annihilate to make photons. But as we lower the temperature of the photons, okay, eventually the number of photons that are energetic enough to pair produce to make E plus E minus becomes just too small. And so therefore, these reactions become very rare. But these reactions, nothing is stopping them from happening, right? And so therefore, we just annihilate, get rid of all of the electrons and positrons, causing the number density to fall off a cliff. Okay, so does that make intuitive sense, hopefully? Good. Okay, right. I spent too much time on that. Okay, good. So that's the number density. Next, let's do the things that we want for the Friedmann equations, which are the energy density and the pressure. Okay, so for the energy density, we just do the exact same integral. we just add an E inside, okay? But in this regime, non-relativistic, E is basically M, the rest mass. And so therefore, what we'll find is that the energy density is just the number density times the rest mass, okay? Similarly, the pressure, okay? Same integral, but now we just insert P squared over 3E in the integrand, okay? So for the pressure, now let me use the following. So P squared over 3E is, of course, E squared minus M squared over 3E. E is M plus epsilon, so E squared is M squared plus 2M epsilon plus epsilon squared. And again, epsilon is small compared to M. So this is approximately 2M epsilon. The bottom is 3E M plus epsilon, but again, that'll just be 3M. So lowest order. Was that too fast or everyone followed that? Okay. Right, so P squared over 3E is therefore just 2/3 epsilon. Okay, and so then our integral for P, okay, will become let's jump to the end. So G e to the minus m over t over 2 pi squared square root of 2m cubed like before. We'll set a t cubed from before. Another t from here, okay, so t to the fifth. This 2/3, and then integral 0 to infinity. And now instead of x to the 1/2, we'll have one more x, so x to the 3/2, e to the minus x dx. Okay, so in the same way that this is gamma of 3/2, this is gamma of 5/2, okay? And of course, gamma of 5/2 is equal to gamma of 3/2 times 3/2. Good? Okay, so this 3/2 cancels this 2/3, okay? Giving me, in the end, that this is going to be equal to number density times temperature. Okay, and of course that's just the famous ideal gas law, right? Okay, and so now comparing the pressure to the energy density, okay? So since T is very small compared to M, the pressure is very small compared to the energy density, okay? Which again is the result that we expected, right? Because for non-relativistic matter, pressure is negligible. The equation of state parameter W is close to minus. I'm close to zero. Okay. Good. So, any questions about that? Okay. We could go through what happens when we have a non-zero chemical potential, but I mean, it's very straightforward. You know, you just add an extra minus mu inside the integral. Okay. So maybe I'll skip that. Okay. Okay, so to summarize, did I ever write down the expression for the, yes, I did, okay, so good. So to summarize, the energy density for each relativistic species is this t to the fourth times some numbers, okay? For the non-relativistic species, it's this exponential times mass, but again, this is exponentially tiny compared to this energy density. Okay, so for the species that are in equilibrium, the total energy density is dominated by the relativistic species, okay? So for the species that are in equilibrium, the non-relativistic ones become unimportant for the overall energy density. So then let's just write down then the overall energy density. Okay, so then the total is the sum over all the species, okay, of their individual energy densities, which is, as I said, approximately just given by a sum over only the relativistic species, of their energy densities, okay? Which we can write as, again, pi squared over 30. And now a sum over the relativistic bosons of gi ti to the fourth, and then plus 7/8, a sum over all of the relativistic fermions of, yeah, gi ti to the fourth. Okay. Now, I've written here Ti for each species' temperature. And that may seem confusing because, as I said before, in equilibrium, the species that are in equilibrium with each other will have the same temperature. So then what's the point of writing an index on this I? Okay, and the reason for this is that eventually species will fall out of equilibrium, and in principle, you know, and in principle when that happens, they can have different temperatures. Okay, and so for that reason, for now, I will allow the different species to possibly have different temperatures. Okay, good. Now, let me define a useful piece of notation that appears all over the literature, which is the following. I will write this, a definition of the parameter G star, okay? So total energy density we will define as G star, and then times pi squared over 30, times the photon temperature to the fourth, okay? So this serves as a definition of this quantity G star, okay? So this G star is therefore defined as, well, this thing, okay? So it's the sum over all of the relativistic bosons of their g's times the ratio of ti over t photon to the fourth, and then plus 7/8 sum over the relativistic fermions of their g's times ti over t photon to the fourth. Okay, so again, this t without an index, that's the photon temperature, okay? And so therefore, you know, we will use the photon temperature as our like reference temperature. The reason for that is that the CMB is observed. And so it makes sense, therefore, to use the photons as our reference point. Okay? And again, this is only a sum over the relativistic species because, again, the non-relativistic ones are negligible to the total energy density while they are in equilibrium. Okay? Right. Okay, good. So good. So now we know how to express the energy density appearing in the Friedmann equations in terms of the temperature. Okay. So the next thing then we want to know then is how does the temperature evolve over time? That'll then tell us how the energy density and the pressure evolve over time. Okay. You know, which we'll need for the Friedmann equations. Now, in principle, we can compute the time evolution of the temperature just using what we've already worked out, okay? So we said that the energy density scales with temperature in this way, okay? And we also previously worked out the continuity equation, right? So d rho dt, you know, plus 3h rho plus p is equal to zero, right? Okay, now it's true that, you know, when there are frequent interactions, each species, you know, each species on its own won't be independently conserved this way, but the total energy density summing over all the species has to obey the continuity equation, right? Okay, you know, so this fact is still true, even when there are lots of interactions taking place. Okay, good. So we have d rho dt. We also have rho as a function of t. So in principle, we could compute the time evolution of the temperature, d big t, d little t, just by taking, rho dot. So d rho dt compared to d rho d temperature, right? Okay, yeah, we could do that. And doing so does work, okay? You know, this does give the right answer, you know, for the evolution of the temperature. But doing this can be a bit tedious. And so it turns out that there is a somewhat more elegant way to work out the evolution of the temperature over time. And the more elegant way is to note that the temperature has to evolve adiabatically as the universe expands. Okay, and so a simpler way than this, okay, is to use the fact that the temperature, must evolve adiabatically. So what does that mean here? Okay, what that means is that the overall entropy in the universe is constant, or equivalently, dS is zero. Okay, and so to use this, let's compute the entropy for our various species. Okay, so we can, let me flip the boards. Okay, so to use this, we'll have to first work out an expression for the entropies. Okay, so let's do that. So we can derive an expression using the following argument. Okay, so we'll start with the first law of thermodynamics, which you guys hopefully remember. I'll write it in this way. So dE plus pdV minus T dS is equal to zero. Okay, where again, dE is d rho v. Yeah?
So whatever happens in our universe, the entropy remains constant.
That's right. So as long as there's nothing outside the universe adding heat to the universe from the outside, assuming that our universe is a self-contained system, that's right. Yeah.
Wait, sorry. What happens though, like, when the universe expands, right, and we have a certain, like, we can see, we can observe, you know, up to a certain radius, and then, like, outside of that, you know.
We have a causal horizon, is that what you mean?
Yeah. So what happens to entropy with that, if there's a causal horizon? Like, is entropy constant? Like, entropy can't be constant within our causal horizon, can it? Because
well, so our horizon changes over time. Did we do that yet or not? Like the horizon evolving over time? I forget.
I don't know.
We sort of saw see the conformal time yesterday.
So. Okay, good. Yeah, okay, right. Yeah, so right. So the horizon size does evolve over time. Let's consider some co-moving patch. Okay? For a homogeneous universe, which we are for now considering, there's no net flux from inside this patch versus outside the patch. Okay, so therefore the entropy in that patch we can take as a constant.
Wait, sorry, I'm still confused. Like, okay, the horizon changes size over time, but the amount of stuff in that horizon changes, right? The universe is expanding, so a lot of that stuff leaves.
Right? Yeah, so yeah, initially the horizon might be tiny compared to this region. Later on it might be the same size, later on it might be bigger.
But the universe is expanding during that time, so like mm-hmm. a lot of the galaxies and stuff that we see, like, it's not
right
there anymore. So
yeah.
Why is entropy constant?
Yes, right. So my box wasn't a horizon size. My box here is some fixed co-moving size, co-moving with the expansion. And I'm saying that for this co-moving volume, there's no flux across the boundary for a homogeneous universe. And so therefore, the entropy inside this co-moving volume is constant.
Okay.
The entropy density in physical units, you are correct, the entropy density will dilute, okay, as the volume of this box grows in proper units. But the entropy inside that box is constant as long as there's nothing outside the box adding entropy, heat energy into the box, right? That's the picture that I have in mind, if that makes sense. 5 minutes. Okay, so now our goal for the last few minutes just is to work out an expression for the entropy. Okay, so we're starting from our first law of thermodynamics. Okay, then we use this, and then I'll also use d pressure times volume is dP times V plus P times dV. Okay, And so therefore, now I can write my first law of thermodynamics as d of rho plus p v minus v dp is equal to t ds. Okay, and then I just move the t over to the other side. Okay, so t ds is 1 over t times this. Okay, the next step is to use that in equilibrium, the following identity holds. D pressure, D temperature is rho plus P over T. Familiar to you guys? Okay, good. Yeah, I mean, yeah, proving this is very easy, but I'll skip it for now. Okay, so then if we plug this in, then our DS takes the following form, total derivative of rho plus p v over t. Okay, and so therefore the entropy then, S is this quantity here. Okay, good, so now we have, okay good, so now we have an expression for the entropy. And it's easy to verify for yourself that if you take the time derivative of this, S dot, okay, you can verify for yourself that indeed ds dt vanishes. Okay, so what I mean is that you can plug in rho dot using the continuity equation. You can get p dot from dp dt and also t dot. And then you can then use the Hubble expansion to relate all these time derivatives to the Hubble expansion rate. Okay, and so yeah, and so verifying this vanishes might be a useful exercise for you guys to go through. Okay, good. So we have that this quantity, the entropy, is conserved, and so since we have a conservation law, we can then use that then to then figure things out. Okay, so what we'll do now is to define the entropy density little s as S over volume, okay, and is therefore rho plus p over t. Okay, we already saw that for a relativistic species, rho is given by g pi squared over 30, t to the fourth, and then times either 1 7/8. Or bosons and fermions. Okay, we also saw that the pressure is just rho over 3. So therefore, the entropy density is therefore 4/3 rho over T. Because the pressure is just 1/3 of rho. Okay, and then plugging in our expression for the energy density, what we get is g times 2 pi squared over 45 t cubed. And then again times 1 7/8. Okay? Okay, good. So, right. So this is the entropy density for any species with some, you know, with some number g of degrees of freedom. Okay? Good, so then the total entropy density, little s total, will just be a sum over all the species, okay? And then like for the energy density, like for the number density, et cetera, this is gonna be dominated by the relativistic species, right? So it's approximately equal to a sum over the relativistic species of their entropies, okay? And now similar to how we defined g star for the total energy density, I'll define a g star s, again, as some sum over all the GIs of all the individual components. Okay, so we'll define G star S as a sum over the relativistic bosons of their GIs times Ti over T cubed, and then 7/8, a sum over all the relativistic fermions of their GIs times Ti over T cubed. Okay. A very similar expression to our G star. The only difference is that the 4 is now a 3, okay, due to the 1 over T here. Okay, good. So, right, so, yeah, good. So we're almost done. So now what I said before was that the total entropy is conserved, okay? So therefore, this G star S, okay, multiplied by T cubed times some numbers, that's our entropy density. To get total entropy, it'll be something like A cubed, okay? So this product remains constant, right? Okay, good. So now what we'll use is, so now what we'll do is to use this fact to tell us now how T evolves as a function of A, okay? So first, let's consider like the usual case, okay? So normally, as I said before, all the different species, they're all in thermal equilibrium with each other with the same temperature, right? Okay, right. And so therefore, in this expression, all these factors of T will just be one, and therefore G star S in that regime, G star S will just be equal to G star, just equal to the sum over all the G's, right? Okay, right. These are just numbers, so therefore as a function of time, G star S is a constant as a function of time, right? Okay, as long as the species all have the same temperature, right? If this is a constant, then T just scales like 1 over A, okay? So therefore, you know, what we find is that, you know, if this G star S is constant, then we find that the temperature of all the species just scales like 1 over A, okay? And that's the behavior, you know, that we got before in the collisionless regime, right? So what we find is that, even when there are collisions, the temperature evolves the same way as we got in the collisionless regime, which is, you know, somewhat interesting, okay? So then the next question to ask is this G star constant? G star S. And the answer to that question is that it's not always constant, okay? There are times when this G star S changes in time, okay? Okay, so since we are out of time, maybe I'll leave on that cliffhanger, and then next time, then we'll talk about the regimes when this G star S changes over time. You can probably guess when that happens, right? Right. Do you guys have a guess for when it will fail to be constant?
Want to be constant?
Yeah. This G star S. Well, okay, so recall that we said there was a sum over these relativistic species that are...
temperature of the relativistic species are different. They're not in equilibrium, one of them, like...
Well, so I'm still imagining everything's in... I mean, the species are all staying in equilibrium, okay? So if they all stay in equilibrium, why then would my sum over the relativistic species change at some temperature? It's a sum over the relativistic species. And so why would that change at some temperature?
You mentioned non-relativistic particles going.
Once the temperature hits around the mass, some species will go non-relativistic. What happens then?
They interact with their antiparticles and become.
Their number density plummets, right? So therefore, the entropy in that species goes away. But the total is conserved. So therefore, the entropy in that species goes into the other species, okay? The number density of those other species changes from the adiabatic result. From the normal non-interacting result. If the number density departs from the normal non-interacting result, that means the temperature has also departed from that result, okay? And so next time we will then complete this thought to work out how the temperature changes from this behavior once some species goes on relativistic and then disappears. Okay, yeah. You can probably guess what's going to happen, but next time we'll actually work it out in detail. Yeah. Okay, so we'll stop here for now. Oh yeah.
We worked out all of the species that like we know some kind of equational state for them, like W equal to zero or W equal to like one over third, and then
So we worked out the equation of state for those species as a function of temperature, right? So we showed that when the temperature is large compared to the rest mass, they have an equation of state of one third, and we showed that once they go non-relativistic, right, their pressure becomes negligible, right?
But like we can have some regimes that like equation of state is not as straightforward as this. Like we have some exotic equation of state, and then on those regimes, like.
Here I'm considering just like particles, like photons, electrons, etc.
I guess what I want to ask is that like if we can have some kind of equation of state which is not the like radiation and like the normal equation of states that we know, can we somehow see that the like entropy is not conserved, like ES is not equal to zero, is like more than zero, something that like we make like from dark energy maybe?
No, you won't. I mean, no, like without some sort of external injection of thermal energy, you cannot change the entropy in some part of the universe. Yeah. Once you sum over everything, yeah.
I understand that like, if the universe is isolated, but like, I think maybe like if we have some equational state that is like P equal to minus rho or something, can it somehow mimic the effect of like injecting some energy to this universe, which is isolated?
Well, to the other species, sure, right. Yeah, so you can transfer some of the entropy from your species that you want to do crazy things to the other ones, sure. But if asking about the total summing over everything in the universe, no, right? Without injecting some other source of heat, there's no way to change the entropy summing over everything, right? As long as the universe is a self-contained system, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, perhaps I'm not understanding what you're asking, but we can chat more maybe, yeah. Any other questions before we stop? Okay, if not, then Monday?
Monday.
Monday, okay. All right, see you guys.